There's an assumption, or there used to be an assumption, that if you just posted, if you wrote something and posted it, it was automatically protected.
I call that the biggest lie in copyright.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Catherine Goldman is an intellectual property attorney and the editor of Creative Law Center, a legal blog that offers advice to creative professionals. She writes about how writers, artists, and entrepreneurs can protect and thus profit from their work. Catherine believes it's important for creative professionals to know their rights so they can stay out of court. Catherine served as the chair of the intellectual property section of the Maryland State Bar Association from 2011 to 2012. And since 2012, she's been recognized as a Maryland super lawyer. In addition to protecting artists in court, Catherine lectures at Hood College and Stevenson University. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm fine. Ebony, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm so happy to talk to you because you are a copyright and trademark attorney. And I'm wondering if you can give us a little background about how you got into law, specifically this line of law.
So I got into law truly because I got out of college and it was like, what am I going to do now? Right. This area of law is because I have an interest in art, and my background is my undergrad was in art history. My mom was the dean of the Maryland Institute College of Art. My sister's an artist. My husband's a craftsman. I mean, so I'm just surrounded by art and creatives. And so that's how come I'm involved in intellectual property, copyright, and trademark.
Wow. So are you an artist yourself?
I am an aspiring artist. In fact, I have been painting for the past few years, and I just sold my first piece last month.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah, on Instagram to a woman in Australia. How cool is that?
That's very cool. That's very 21st century.
No, I know. It's great.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay, so Catherine, most of my audience, they're bloggers and they're writers. And we always hear the term copyright, 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 copyright. And I think most of us, we know copyright from books. When we open a book, we see the copyright with the date and the publisher and all. So what exactly is copyright besides just a date?
So copyright is actually a bundle of rights that a creator has the minute they fix their creative work in a tangible medium. Okay. And fixing something in tangible medium means writing it down, recording it, painting it, anything that you can touch or see, feel, anything that's tangible. Digital files are tangible. So photographs, JPEGs, documents, PDFs, those are all considered tangible. Audio files, MP4s, those are all considered tangible. So anytime you fix your creative expression in a tangible form, you're entitled to a group of rights.
Okay.
And those rights include the right to reproduce your work, the right to perform your work, the right to create derivatives of your work. Okay. So when you sell a piece, for instance, when you sell a book, you are selling the book. You are not selling the content of the book. That person doesn't have the right to reproduce what's in that book. When an artist sells a piece of art, they're selling the work. They're not selling the rights that go along with it. Mm-hmm. So if the person buys a piece of art, they can't take it and put it on a calendar and sell the calendar. They can't take it and put it on a coffee mug and sell the coffee mugs. Mm-hmm. They've only sold that piece of work. Mm-hmm. The rights stay with the artist. They stay with the creator. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of the difficult concept. There's the tangible work, and then there are the intangible rights that go with the creation.
Okay, right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. So the tangible work would be like the actual, the physical book that, mm-hmm. let's say I write. And so so the publisher has the right to like reproduce that book and sell it. And someone else, if they buy it, I guess they could resell it if they wanted to, right?
They can resell their copy of it.
Their copy, right. But they can't copy my content and then try to sell that as their own or for other purposes.
They can't copy that content and sell it as yours.
Okay.
They can't say, I have, you know, Ebony Haywood's book. Right. And you can buy a copy of it off of my website because I scanned it and now it's a PDF,
right. Okay.
You know, or I busted the Mobi file or whatever it is. And now I'm offering it on my website.
Mm-hmm.
So they cannot do that even if they use your name.
Right. Okay. So then what is the difference? Because we also hear the word trademark a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the difference between copyright and trademark?
Okay, so copyright is a law that protects creative expression, okay? Mm-hmm. And trademark is a law that serves to protect identifiers of goods and services, okay? It serves to protect brands. So when I say Golden Arches, you think McDonald's.
Right.
When I say Mickey Mouse, you think Disney. When I say swoosh, you think Nike. So the swoosh is a trademark because in your mind, you equate that swoosh with the provider of the good, Nike. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So trademark is a source identifier. It's about branding.
Okay? So it sounds like trademark might be linked very heavily to imagery or images, pictures.
That logos are trademarks. Logos can be trademarks. But, you know, so there can be imagery in trademark. But the key is whatever it is has to act as a source identifier. You have to look at it or hear it and you have to think, oh, that's Disney.
Right.
That's Coca-Cola.
Right.
That's Microsoft.
Right.
That's Apple. You think that Apple logo and you think that's the Apple product.
Right.
So you're making the connection between what you see and the source of the product or the service.
Okay. And so, so let's say I have a logo, like a book, mm-hmm. with an Apple on it. Mm-hmm. All right, Apple. And so if I want that to be like the logo for my brand, I would get that image trademarked?
Correct.
Okay. Copyrighted.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
You would get the content of the book.
Right.
Would be protected by copyright.
Uh-huh.
But if the Apple is an identifier for your publishing company, say your publishing company was Apple Publishing,
uh-huh.
Then that would be trademark. And people would look at that and say, oh, that's the publishing company.
Okay, right, okay. So as a blogger, as someone who's blogging, mm-hmm. how important is it for them to have the content on their blog protected?
Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting question. And in fact, the Copyright Office has recently addressed this question by offering a new form I'm just going to look at this screen over here. A new form to protect blog content. And it used to be that you can only protect blog content. The Copyright Office did not know how to deal with this massive amount of online content. And the rule is that you needed to file an application based on the date of publication, right? Hmm. Well, some people blog every day,
right?
Every week, right? And they would be required to file an application for every blog post. Well, that is unmanageable.
Right, right.
And so just recently, last September or October, the Copyright Office came out with a new form that allows you to file for 3 months worth of blog posts using one application. Hmm. And it's called the Group Application for Short Online Literary Works. And so blog posts are considered literary works. And tweets, if they're long enough, could be considered literary works. I believe the minimum is 150 words. Maximum is 10,000 words. So, you know, 150 to 10,000 words, that's a sweet spot for blog posts, right? Mm-hmm. Facebook posts, if they're long enough, could be considered literary works. And so if someone is ripping off your blog posts or your Facebook posts or your tweets, you can protect them now using this short online literary work application in the Copyright Office. In November, I offered a workshop in the Creative Law Center membership, and we went in depth in that application. So that's a resource for people if they want to pop over to the Creative Law Center and check that out.
Okay. So it's not just because I think there's an assumption, or there used to be an assumption, that if you just posted, if you wrote something and posted it, it was automatically protected. But that's not the case.
All right. So I call that the biggest lie in copyright. Okay. It is technically true. The minute you write something down, that bundle of rights that I talked about at the beginning, you own those rights the minute you write something down, the minute you fix something in tangible form, you are the creator with that bundle of rights. But it's the biggest lie because you can't do anything with those rights unless you have a copyright registration on that creative work.
Okay.
And now with the passage of the CASE Act, there is going to be a copyright small claims board where you can now go and enforce your rights with a registration in hand, and you don't have to go into federal court. So now there's real meaningful enforcement for small businesses, bloggers, writers, you know, indie authors, small publishers. Now there's a lot of power behind the copyright registration.
Right. And how much is the registration?
A registration is, I believe, $55 these days.
Okay. And that so that $55 would cover that 3 months that the...
3 months worth of blog posts for $55. Right. You could, one book would be $55. There are some strategies if you wanted to submit an application for up to 10 unpublished works. You
right.
could do that on one application. Uh-huh. So instead of having to pay 10 application fees, you could pay one application fee if they're unpublished. But if your work is published, with the exception of the short online literary works, you have to pay an application fee for each work based on the date of publication.
And when you say published, do you mean digitally or physically?
Published in the copyright sense means making it available for sale, lease, or further distribution.
Okay. For sale, lease, or further distribution.
Right. So even if it's an ebook,
okay.
if you put it up on Amazon, you've published it.
Okay. And if you've posted a blog post, that's published.
Well, so because of this new application, you don't have to say whether that's published or not anymore in a copyright sense. In a WordPress sense, you know, you're hitting publish, right? But in a copyright sense, because now you can group 3 months of blog posts together, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter whether they're considered published or not.
Okay. So this reminds me of this issue that is happening with people taking your photos and using them like for their own identity purposes, like literally just stealing a picture of me and putting it on their Facebook, whatever, and saying that, oh, that's me, when it's not them. Are your photos protected? Or how can you protect photos that you're posting on social media, like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter?
Right. Yeah. That's a difficult problem. First of all, is the photo of you a selfie?
Let's say yes.
Okay. So if it's a selfie, then you're the copyright holder of the photo.
Okay.
All right. Because you took it. If someone else took it, they own the copyright. Okay.
Oh.
Right. Okay. So, and just being in the photograph or in a video, which is also very likely, as a character in a video, as a person in a video, you do not have any copyright to enforce your rights there. Okay. Mm. So if it's a selfie and somebody has snagged a selfie and put it on their Facebook and said, that's me, or, you know, they do it on Instagram, they do it everywhere, right? If it's a selfie, you have the right to take it down. I would also say that you probably have the right to have it removed under the terms of service of those platforms, because those platforms do not want you misusing the identity of others.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's not a copyright issue. That would be a terms of service issue for Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc.
Right. Okay. So let's say, Catherine, that my friend took a picture of me and I posted it on my Facebook or Instagram and someone snagged it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the right to say you can't do that?
You don't have a copyright.
I don't have
a copyright. But I bet you have a right under the terms of service.
Okay. I got it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. So then let's talk about, because I noticed you had, and actually first, before I get to that, when should we start protecting our work as bloggers?
Okay. So every 3 months
Everything.
Is when you should do it.
Okay.
And so then the question becomes, what happens, and this would be not just for bloggers, but for any creative portfolio. What happens if you haven't done anything and you've spent years creating things and you have this huge backlog
right.
of creative work that hasn't been protected? How do you decide what to protect and when? And so what I've come up with is a triage method.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this in the copyright basic posts on my blog. The Creative Law Center.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to first identify the creative work that you are marketing and selling. Okay. What is your business based on? What is your business's bread and butter? You want to protect that first. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you want to protect the work that you plan to invest a lot of marketing money in. What are you going to push forward as your next new content? You want to protect that. And then thirdly, you want to protect the content that has already been infringed. Okay. If somebody has stolen it, you want to protect that content. So then you're in a position to enforce your rights for that content. So that's how I say triage it, because you can't do everything all at once.
Right.
You want to take it in small bites. What are you making money on? What do you plan to make money on? And what has already been stolen.
Okay. Yeah. And that helps you to really just prioritize
mm-hmm.
your work there. Okay.
With an eye towards revenue. I mean, the goal
right.
here is revenue.
Right. Okay. That's good. Good advice there. Okay. So A lot of writers, particularly writers of fiction, sometimes nonfiction, they like to mention famous people or songs or, you know, what cartoons in their work. Can they, if I'm writing a story, can I say that my character bought Heinz ketchup?
Yeah, and I have done a lot of writing on this subject. It comes up all the time with my clients. So yes, you know, if you walk into a grocery store, you can say that you bought Heinz ketchup because you're not using it in a trademark sense. Okay. You're not selling ketchup. There's not going to be confusion that, you know, you that Heinz is endorsing your work or whatever. What I say to the writers I talk to is, why are you using Heinz ketchup? Why aren't you either using a generic name, calling it ketchup, or making up your own brand of ketchup? You're a creative writer. Mm-hmm. Create. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's really not necessary to do that. Now, sometimes it is necessary to use popular brands and names of songs and things. And we'll talk about lyrics in a minute. And I did a post on the site about Ready Player One. Hmm. And Ready Player One is a book. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
It's a favorite of mine, but it's full of references to 80s pop culture and video games and trademarks. And so again, what he's doing is he's recreating the world of the 80s. And it was important as part of that storyline to have all those brands in there.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's not going to be trademark infringement.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So that's brands. For songs, you can use the name of the artist and you can use the title of the song in your work. Okay? Lyrics are problematic. And the reason they're a problem is because they're generally very short and they're highly creative. And so copyright law really vests them with a lot of protection. And if you take just a few lyrics, you could be taking the heart and soul of that creative work, okay? And you really shouldn't be able to do that without compensating the creator of that song, the writer of that song. So songs, taking lyrics is a problem, and I don't recommend it. I have done some licensing work for authors who have licensed lyrics for their works, for their books. So that can be done, but it's expensive.
Mm-hmm. Just like using, like if you're a music reviewer and you want to post snippets or clips of a song, that sounds expensive. I mean, that sounds like you would need to pay a lot of money to.
Right. And you know, I actually don't know the law on that because, there is a fair use exception for, commentary and critique and reporting, right? So if somebody drops a new album and you're doing a review on it and you're doing, you know, 10 seconds of the first cut and 10 seconds of the whatever, that might be considered fair use.
Mm-hmm.
Fair use is a defense to trademark, to copyright infringement that allows you to use a small bit of someone else's creative work without permission.
Okay.
And there's an academic argument that fair use should apply to including lyrics in books. But that law is just not out there yet. And I don't want any of my client authors to be the test case.
Okay. And fair use is what allows us, like if we're writing a book review, Is that what gives us permission to maybe publish a little snippet of the book, like a line or two?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. You know, and it went right to say a quote, this was beautifully lyrical prose at this point, or, you know, whatever you're saying, you're allowed to do little quotes. That is fair use.
Okay. So video clips, If you are, so like if you're a movie reviewer, let's say, can you just take a clip of like an Alfred Hitchcock film and post it on your website?
If you're a reviewer, if you're doing scholarly writing, if you're doing history of Alfred Hitchcock, if you're doing a comparison between Alfred Hitchcock and a modern director, I could see that there would be a strong fair use argument for using clips comparing a Hitchcock film to, I don't know, who would be comparable. But I could see that there would be a strong fair use argument for doing that.
But if you're not, let's just say you just like Alfred Hitchcock and you want to write a blog post about him and you want to accompany it with like a clip of his film, that would be problematic.
It depends. So a film is 2 hours long, say.
Yeah.
And if you use a clip that's 30, 60, or 90 seconds, you know, you're not taking the heart and soul of Alfred Hitchcock's film in 30, 60, or 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's unlikely to be considered an infringement. But if you're taking 30, 60, or 90 seconds of a song that's only 3 minutes long, you know, you're getting the heart and soul of that piece of creative work. And that's why there's no hard and fast rule about how much you can take. You really have to, why are you taking it? Why are you using it? And have you taken the heart and soul of that work? And if you have, it's not going to be considered fair use.
That's so interesting, that term heart and soul. So, because that can, it's kind of vague. In terms of a song, I can understand, like what part of the song is the heart and soul of the song? The chorus? A particular verse? Like, how do they even determine that?
Right. And it is vague. Absolutely is vague. And it's all case-by-case considerations. The court will, or, you know, when you're doing a fair use analysis. Now, let me just say that there is, at the Center for Social Media at American University, has these wonderful booklets on fair use. They're like field guides for fair use. And so artists can go and snag these pamphlets and can go through and can determine for themselves, following these rules, whether the use they're making of someone else's work is fair. So that is a resource that I send a lot of creatives to so that they can make the judgment on their own. However, when it gets into court, it's a case-by-case basis, and the judges go through these four steps to analyze whether the use is fair. And there was actually, just last week, a big decision on fair use that is narrowing what constitutes fair use. And I'm in the middle of a blog post on that issue right now, so stay tuned.
Okay. We will have to stay tuned. Yes. You know, another thing I thought of in terms of writing, particularly fiction, I think it's called Roman Clef, where there's like a true events. Like I want to write a story about something that happened the other day and I keep everything the same, except I just changed their names. But everything else is the same. So like, let's say someone's reading that story and they recognize themselves, but I didn't use their name. I just changed their name to, like, if her name was Judy, I changed it to Justine or something. Can she say, I don't want you publishing this about me, even though
it's not about her?
Yeah.
So couple of things. The first thing you want to do in the front of your book is you want to draft a nice disclaimer.
Okay.
That makes it very clear that you have, well, have you fictionalized it? Yes, because you've changed the names. Okay. And so you want to put a disclaimer up there. All right. Yeah. Now, can she have a claim against you? The potential claims are, first of all, if it wasn't a public event and it was something that you knew about her that the general public does not know, if she is identifiable to herself or to others, then she might have a claim for invasion of privacy.
Mm.
You told a secret about her that you shouldn't have told, that you had no right to share with the public, there may be a claim for invasion of privacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if she's recognizable to herself and to others, and you change the story in a way that she finds offensive, she might have a claim for defamation against you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay? So those are the two claims. Now, if it's a celebrity and you use the celebrity to market your book, or if you use the celebrity in a way that suggests the celebrity is endorsing your book, that celebrity might have a claim for a violation of their right of publicity.
Mm.
Okay? They get to profit off of their off their celebrity. You don't have a right to profit off of their celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
However, having said that, you can still put celebrities in your book. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you could still write a story and go to a concert where there is a real, you know, a real pop singer or celebrity singer at that concert. You can talk about if a celebrity, you know, passes through your story, but you don't change what happens. Like if they visit your town or if they're from your hometown, and, you know, you can talk about a celebrity in passing that way. For public facts that are verifiable, and that's not going to be a problem.
Right, right. But if you use a celebrity's name in the title of your book.
Yeah, that can be a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That can be a problem.
Yeah. How does fan fiction work, Catherine? So, you know, if I want to, let's see what's popular now. I can't even think. Like John Green. I take one of John Green's book. John Green books, and I want to write a fan fiction of his book. Can I do that? I mean, is that?
Well, sure you can. You can write whatever you want, and you might be able to share it, but you can't sell it.
Oh, okay. So I can write. So can I publish it on a website without selling it?
I am not a specialist in fan fiction, I have to tell you. When I have a fan fiction question come up, I have to research it. And I refer to the blog of a woman named Rebecca Tushnet, T-U-S-H-N-E-T.
Uh-huh.
She is a intellectual property professor at Harvard. She is the boss in this area. And she's done a lot of writing on it. And so when there's a question, I generally go and look it up for the answer. So I really can't speak to that other than that generality I just gave you.
Right, 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 right. So do you have bloggers that ask your writers, writers in general who asks, I can't even talk now. Do you have bloggers or writers who come to you with questions that you see are very common? Like, what are some common questions you're asked?
Oh, well, you have covered many, many of the common questions. I mean, the difference between copyright and trademark.
Okay.
That's huge. Now, for writers, the trademark issue is, can you trademark a book title? And the answer is no, you can't trademark a book title, but you can trademark the title of a book series. All right. So if you have a number of books and the series has a title, that is worthy of a trademark. So that's a question I get all the time from writers. You cannot copyright the title of a book. The Copyright Office is not going to give you a monopoly on the title of a book.
Huh.
So there are a lot of books out there with the same title.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I always So you could do, I could take someone else's title and use it for my book?
Yes, you could. The question is, do you want to, really?
Right. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, you probably don't want to.
Right.
You know, just because you want to establish your own footprint, you want your own presence, you want your own following, your own readership, right? And you don't want to confuse it with other people's. But it's not protected by copyright, so you could do that.
Is that titles of books or is that titles for songs and films? And
can titles, it would be titles for books, songs, films are a different story because Hollywood has their own set of rules, right? And in Hollywood, there is a registry for titles of movies. And I'll point you to the movie, The Butler, right?
Mm-hmm.
The title of that movie is The Butler by Lee Daniels.
Right? Mm.
And the reason that's the full title is because decades ago, there was another movie called The Butler.
Okay.
Right? So there are, I don't know if there's screenwriting guild rules. There's another set of rules that controls the titles of Hollywood movies.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense.
So just to take that one step further, if you're writing a story that you are interested in one day having someone option to produce into a film, don't use a title that has been used by a movie.
Okay.
Of course, a lot of books, once they're optioned, the titles are changed.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about if you want to like if someone wants to purchase the rights to your book and turn it into a film, what are some things that writers should be on the lookout for or aware of when they're when they want to do that? Like what are some red flags that we should look out for if someone approaches us and say, hey, I want to buy their buy your book. Can I make a movie?
So mostly what happens is producers approach writers and request options. It's the option to buy the rights.
Uh-huh.
And the reason they want the option is because options are much less expensive than buying the rights to make the movie all at once. And it takes a number of years from the date of the option agreement until the production of the movie. And producers need to once they option your book, they need to get screenwriters. They need to put financing in place. They need to, it's called, attach a star or a lead. They need to attach a director to the project. So it takes a lot of time and money to put this in place, and deals fall apart on a regular basis. And so producers don't want to have to lay out the cash to buy the rights to the book until they have all these pieces of the package together. Okay. So that's the first thing that a writer needs to know is that it takes a long time.
Right.
The option agreement, a red flag for both the producer and the writer is if an option agreement does not include a purchase price for the rights. So you buy an option, the producer buys an option, and let's say they pay $1,000 for the option and the writer gives them 18 months to turn it into a project. So 18 months is generally not long enough. So there's a right to renew the option for another $1,000 or $1,500 for another 18 months. And sometimes there's a third renewal right in there as well. And so then at the end of 4 years or whatever, the producer has the package together and they're getting ready to shoot. On the first day of shooting, all right, when that budget for the project is in place, that's when the writer gets paid for the property.
Really?
That's how that works. And it's generally a percentage of the budget. Now, I will tell you that things are changing here, especially with Netflix and Amazon, et cetera, and also with serialized podcasts, dramatic podcasts. So, you know, things are changing and there's an overlap between podcasts and audiobooks. And you know, so that's still kind of a dynamic situation.
So it's funny you mentioned audiobooks. I completely even forgot about, and I listen to audiobooks all the time. It's actually my reading of choice now because I have long commutes. So for like Audible, who's like, I think they're part of Amazon, right?
Yes.
So if they want to produce a audio version of a book, do they have to purchase copies?
So the publisher of the book generally produces the audiobook.
Okay.
It's not Audible itself. Audible is just the platform.
Okay. Okay. Because sometimes I'm on Audible and I see Audible Original. And
oh, well, that may be. Yes. So I don't know what the deal terms are for that.
Okay. That's interesting. Right. I kind of wanted to go back to photographs because when you were talking, it kind of, I had this thought. So if I take a photograph, let's say I take a selfie and there's someone in the background, I'm at Disneyland or whatever, and someone's in the background and I post that on a social media site and that person just happens to see it somehow. Can they say, wait, I'm in that photograph. I don't want my picture on your social media. I didn't even know I was being photographed. Take it down.
Well, they could try to say that. I don't know how effective that would be. You're in a public place.
Yeah.
They're in the background. They're not the subject matter. It's incidental to your use, which is you and, right. you know, Cinderella's castle behind you. So,
right. okay.
You know, again, that wouldn't be a copyright issue. You'd have to take a look at the terms on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
But it's not an invasion of privacy. It's in a public place. It's not defamatory because they are there,
right?
you
right.
know.
Yeah.
So even if it were a celebrity, you know, I remember one time I was in the airport and Clint Eastwood was in the coffee shop behind me.
Oh, wow! Did you really?
Totally.
For those who can't see, Catherine took a selfie with him in the background. Okay, that's so funny. Wow. I love that story. That's a great story.
Yeah, I mean, there's low risk of that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you know, I think maybe I've just watched too many of these like action or thriller films where there's someone who has, they're like trying to, they've gone into witness protection or something. And then they happen to be in a coffee shop and someone happened to take a picture and they showed up and then someone that they knew saw them in the coffee shop. I know that, you know, like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so now we're really on the fringes of kind of reality, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's Hollywood. And I'm sure it has happened,
mm-hmm.
But it's just not something that most people need to concern themselves with.
Right. Okay.
Let me go back to one more thing about the optioning your book.
Right.
Because I want to make sure that everyone understands if they have written a book that is going to be optioned, authors need to be sure that they have filed a copyright registration on their book, okay? Because the producer is going to want what's called a clean title, and they're going to do a search in the copyright office of the book to make sure that it's been registered. And the author is going to have to sign a series of what are called warranties that the book is original to them, that they haven't invaded anybody's privacy, that they haven't defamed anyone, and that they haven't infringed anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a package that the author needs to be aware of and have in place so that when a producer comes calling, everything is ready for the option agreement.
Okay. What's the difference, or what does it mean if you get your work notarized?
I mean, you might have to sign a document in front of a notary. You might have to sign a contract in front of a notary.
Right.
But that's generally to verify your identity, not to verify your creation or that you are the original creator of a work.
Okay.
Just to verify your identity.
So I've entered, I know as a young person, I entered a few like poetry competitions and I had to get the work notarized. And I never like understood why I needed to do that.
Well, I can only speculate. And yeah. My speculation would be that you are standing up in front of an authority of some kind, a notary, mm-hmm. and you are saying, this is my work. Mm-hmm. And the notary looks at you and signs and says, this person stood before me and said this was their work.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. Catherine, this was actually very informative. Do you have any, I don't know, closing words of advice or wisdom for the up-and-coming blogger or author in terms of just being wise and protecting or practicing
their craft?
Yeah.
Well, I think that I would like to encourage everyone to create. Just be creative. Go out there and do it. Do not let fear of, you know, understanding the law stop you from creating your art. Mm. Write your books, write your blogs, make your podcasts. When you do have a question, come over to thecreativelawcenter.com and see if I have an answer. Mm-hmm. And I try to be very good about responding to comments on all of the blog posts. Mm-hmm. So if you have a question, post a comment or send me an email. And if you're building a creative business, be sure to check out the membership at the Creative Law Center, because there are lots and lots of resources to help you turn your creative business passion into revenue and help build your business. So come and see me is what I'd like to say.
So where are you? Mentioned your website. Is there anywhere else we can find you, or do you want us to find you mostly?
Creativelawcenter.com. And I'm on Twitter. I love Twitter. I think that's fun. And writers tend to be on Twitter.
Right.
So, so I like Twitter, and I'm doing art over on Instagram. So,
Yes.
and LinkedIn, you know,
and LinkedIn. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. So I'm not very active on Facebook.
Right.
I would have to say that. But those other ones, pretty much.
Well, thank you so much, Catherine. This was wonderful. Gosh.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being invited.
Yes, anytime.
That was such an educational conversation with Catherine. I'm so happy that I now know the difference between copyright and trademark, among other things that I've learned. So make sure that if you are an artist or an entrepreneur or a filmmaker or whatever, and you visit her blog at the Creative Law Center, because she has some fabulous articles. I mean, if you enjoyed this conversation, you will enjoy her blog, because there's so much more that she has to share, valuable information to help protect your rights as an artist. So visit her blog and also follow her on Twitter. In the meantime, also visit my blog at zazo.com, or my website, I should say, zazo.com, and sign up for my weekly newsletter. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood, and you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for joining me this weekend. I look forward to having another wonderful conversation with another fabulous person and sharing that with you next week. Enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.